Revelation chapter 1, I'm going to read aloud verses 12 and 13, part of verse 13. Then I'm going to skip and read part of verse 20. Revelation 1, verse 12. And I turned to see the voice that spake with me, and being turned, I saw seven golden candlesticks. And in the midst of the seven candlesticks, one like unto the Son of Man. Now I'm going to skip some things that we've already read together down to verse 20. The mystery of the seven stars which thou sawest in my right hand, and the seven golden candlesticks. The seven stars are the angels of the seven churches, and the seven candlesticks which thou sawest are the seven churches. I really enjoyed the last couple of times working on these main terms that we're needing to use to talk about this wonderful subject. The term candlesticks or lampstands, we found we can use either one of those, meaning the same thing. And we looked at the term churches or congregations and found that we can use either one of those terms and mean the same thing by it. And I really enjoyed the things that we read from the Bible along the way as we were looking into that. Now, I'd like for you to turn with me to Exodus chapter 25, and we're going to learn about the seven candlesticks or seven lampstands, and we're going to see where this comes from, because this is not at all the first time in the Bible that we have seen this, and we're going to go back and learn where it came from, and learn some of the wonders of God's grace through us and to us, the churches, seeing where this wonderful symbol comes from. Exodus chapter 25. Now, Exodus chapter 20 is the Ten Commandments. And then the chapters after this, God is speaking to Moses, which Moses will then tell to the congregation of Israel, about the tabernacle, you know, the wonderful holy tent in which he was to be worshipped, the beautiful, amazing furnishings inside the temple, inside the tabernacle, that symbolized the way God saves sinners through Jesus Christ and has fellowship with those he saves. So Exodus chapter 25, at verse 31, it says there, "And thou shalt make a candlestick," or lampstand, either one, "a candlestick of pure gold." Now, that's just what we just read about is so far farther along in the Bible. It's so many hundreds of years later. Golden candlesticks or lampstands. This is where that vision that John saw, this is where we first learn about it from the Lord. And I'm going to read in the next verse, verse 32. "And six branches shall come out of the sides of it, three branches of the candlestick out of the one side, and three branches of the candlestick out of the other side." Okay, so if there's three out of one side and three out of the other, what's three plus three? Six. But then there's also the middle, the stand part, and so six plus one more equals seven, right? This candlestick, this golden candlestick, has seven places for lamps on it. Now, you can see that this is related to what we read in Revelation, because in Revelation, there are seven golden candlesticks or lampstands. Here in the tabernacle, there's just one, but the one has a place for seven lamps. So these things are related. They are essentially the same, but there's wonderful change that's taken place in the one in Revelation where it's seven separate ones. But this is where it started. Now, in that same chapter, Exodus 25, verse 37, "And thou shalt make the lamps thereof, and they shall light the lamps thereof, that they may give light over against it. So although, you know, it may say candlesticks in your Bible, you know, as we learned before, that doesn't mean necessarily, you know, hard tallow or wax candles like we know of. These are liquid fuel lamps. So there's oil in them. There's seven of them, seven lamps to go on this lampstand or candlestick. Now, I have learned before something about what the deal is with seven. You know, there it distinctly says seven lamps on this thing. Three out one side, three out the other, and one in the middle, seven. And in Revelation, seven candlesticks or lampstands, consistently seven. You know, it's not four, it's not 11. You know, neither is it one of the other special numbers in the Bible. It's not three, it's not 12, it's not 40, it's seven. And I have learned before why seven, but I wasn't really satisfied that I knew how to explain it. You know how if you know something but you don't really know why, then you can tell somebody, but if they ask you why, you don't know. I realized that's where I was. I could say it's seven because that represents so and so, but then if any one of you had said, well, how do you know that? I would say, I'm not sure. Or, you know, why does it represent that? I'd say, I don't really know. So I've been doing some looking, and it's been fascinating to my brain, but more than that, it's been very delicious to my soul to look and see how God has laid down this number seven of things in the Bible. And I think that if you read about the number seven leading up to this sevenfold candlestick, the menorah in the tabernacle, and if you read about the tabernacle and what's going on in there, I think really you don't then need it explained by me. I think it really comes clear, and I think it's beautiful. So I'm going to point out a few of these things to you. Okay, now the tabernacle. We're going to still be talking about what it's like in the tabernacle, and I'm still going to be looking at Exodus 25. Okay, now we're going to pretend for a minute that this room we're in is the tabernacle. Just so you can make sure you're getting the idea. Never mind this half of the room. Just let the wall be right here, okay? And the door to outside is back there. And you come in, and this area here where you all are seated, this is the holy place, or the holy. And then there's a curtain right here, and you can part the curtains and go through, and inside is the most holy place, or holy of holies. And so out here, this is the holy place. And in there, through the curtain, are those things that are the symbol of God forgiving sins because of Jesus shedding his blood on the cross. There are symbols in there about Jesus' perfect righteousness covering over our law-breaking. There are symbols in there about his blood shed on the cross, making it to where God does not look in wrath upon us and our sins. That's in there, and that's all wonderful. Out here are the symbols of the fellowship that we have with God because of what goes on in there. The enjoyment of a kind of a family or household relationship that we sinners can have with God because of what Jesus Christ has done for us, which is symbolized in there in the Holy of Holies. You know what it's like to enjoy living with your own family in your own home, right? You can go somewhere else, and you can might enjoy yourself somewhere else, but right at home with your own family, with your own parents, your own kids, that's the most comfortable, wonderful place to be. And in this holy place out here, God gives us things to look at, pieces of furniture to look at, and by those pieces of furniture, understand the household or family relationship that he brings us into through Jesus Christ. There are three pieces of furniture out here in the holy place, okay? Right here is the golden altar, the small altar. It's something like the size of this little pulpit here, if it were just expanded a little bit. And there, incense is burned. This is not where they put the animal sacrifices. This is where they put the incense to make the sweet-smelling smoke. And then over on one side is the golden candlestick, the sevenfold lampstand, the menorah, okay, which we just read about. That's on one side. And then on the other side is the table. The table made of incorruptible wood covered with gold, so that the table is facing the lampstand, and the lampstand is facing the table. Okay? I'll read Exodus 25:23. Thou shalt also make a table of shittim wood. 2 cubits shall be the length thereof, and a cubit the breadth thereof, and a cubit and a half the height thereof. So, the table. Now, I'm going to read Exodus 25:30. And thou shalt set upon the table show bread before me always, or the bread of the presence. To set upon me the special bread. Set upon the table the special bread. Okay? Now, I'm just going to turn a page to Exodus 26. Exodus 26 and verse 35. And thou shalt set the table without the veil, outside the veil. Remember, there's the veil or curtain right here. Outside of it, in this holy place, this holy room, the table, and the candlestick over against the table on the side of the tabernacle toward the south, and thou shalt put the table on the north side. Our tabernacle, by the way, is backward here from the way it would be laid out in Israel at that time. Okay, so in the holy place, there's the table on one side with the bread on it. And there's the candlestick or lampstand with the seven lamps on it. They're opposite each other. They're on opposite sides of the room from each other. Now, we're going to turn to Leviticus. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. Leviticus, because it's... Can you see the word Levi at the beginning of the word Leviticus? Because it's all about the things of the Levites serving in the tabernacle, the priests who are one of the families among the tribe of Levi, and the rest of the Levites helping. They're the ones who operate everything in this tabernacle. Leviticus 24, starting in verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, I'm sorry, I didn't give you enough time to find your place. Leviticus 24, starting in verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure olive oil beaten for the light. We talked about that a week or two ago, right? These are oil lamps, and the kind of oil is olive oil. Olive oil beaten for the light to cause the lamps to burn continually without the veil of the testimony, outside of the curtain, in the tabernacle of the congregation, shall Aaron order it from the evening unto the morning before the Lord continually. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. He shall order the lamps upon the pure candlestick before the Lord continually. And thou shalt take fine flour and bake 12 cakes or loaves thereof, 2/10 deals shall be in one cake, and thou shalt set them in 2 rows, 6 on a row, upon the pure table before the Lord. Okay. Now, you have here these 2 pieces of furniture opposite each other, and they're in this holy room where everything symbolizes the fellowship that you have as members of the household of God. Now, you don't deserve a place in that household. You know, you deserve to just be thrown into torment for your sins. But God is gracious to you because of what Jesus Christ does on the cross by his blood. That's symbolized in there. Out here is symbolized the fellowship, the enjoyment of the family relationship. Okay. So on one side is the table. And of course, the table has on it food. Now, we're used to that from home, right? That's just normal. You have the table at home and you have the food on it. And you sit down and eat. Now, it says right there in what we just read together, how many loaves or cakes of bread are on the table? 6 on each side for a total of 12. Right. Now, 12 is easy to understand when you're talking about Israel. Because Israel was originally a man. He was originally named Jacob. God changed his name to Israel. And what did he have 12 of? 12 sons. Right. And then God so blessed each of those sons that each one got to be married and have kids, and they had grandkids and lots of great grandkids. You remember when they were down in Egypt and they were in slavery, but God blessed them even in their slavery to where they had lots of kids and they became a great nation of people. And so the kids and grandkids and great-great-great-great-grandkids of all of those 12 sons were then 12 tribes. They're all one nation called Israel, but they are in 12 tribes. Okay. Now, when you see 12 of anything in Israel, it's real easy to understand. Okay, 12 tribes. So, out of those 12 tribes, which tribe goes into the tabernacle to do things on behalf of all of Israel? The tribe of Levi and the family within that tribe, the descendants of Aaron. Right. Aaron, Moses' brother, was the original high priest. He had 4 sons, but 2 of them were burned up for their irreverence in the priesthood. And the other 2 survived. And so Aaron and those 2 sons and then all of their sons after them, they were the ones who came into the tabernacle representing all of Israel or on behalf of all of Israel. So Israel comes into the tabernacle and there's bread on the table, a loaf or cake for every tribe. 12 tribes, 12 loaves of bread. And you understand what that's like, don't you? Because when you sit down at the table, there are plates out, 1 plate for each of you. For example, in the Thad Weems home, there are 2 parents, 1 daughter, 3 sons, and that's a total of how many people? 6. And sometimes there is a sweet grandmother, and so then that's a total of 7 people. And when people come to the table, how many plates are set there? Usually 7 plates, 1 for each person. And so there's enough food on the table for everybody in the household. So Israel comes into the tabernacle. Now, it's not that the whole nation gets to come in. Only the priests get to come in, but on behalf of all 12 tribes. And they come in, and there's 12 cakes or loaves of bread on the table. And we didn't read this particular scripture, but elsewhere in the Bible, you read about how that was handled then. Once a week, fresh bread would be baked and brought in. The old loaves or cakes would be carried out, the new put on the table, and the priests would get to eat the bread on behalf of Israel. The priests get to eat the bread representing all of Israel. You know, it's millions of people. So, you know, 12 cakes of bread really isn't going to be much for millions of people. But the priests get to eat it on behalf of Israel, as if Israel is eating it. Okay? 12 loaves of bread for 12 tribes. A loaf for every tribe. A place set at the table for everybody. I mean, it's a symbol, you know. Now, over on the other side of the room is the menorah, the sevenfold candlestick or lampstand. And interestingly, it doesn't have 12 lamps, right? It doesn't have 12 lamps. It has 7 instead of 12. Now, it's given, you know, what's the purpose of lamps? To provide light. In that tabernacle, there are no windows, and so all of the light, you know, no natural light, or very little, all artificial light, and by God's ordinance, 7 lamps. So, how much light did God provide for that holy place? The light of 7 lamps. Who said there should be 7 lamps? God said there should be 7 lamps. Yes, Moses told the craftsmen, you know, and the priest, yes, make it 7 lamps. But God told him, it was by God's ordinance that there were 7 lamps. There weren't 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 12, 40, 7 lamps. Okay? God being who he is, God being, you know, as he is, do you suppose he accidentally put too many lamps? No. Well, there's 12 loaves or 12 cakes for the 12 tribes. Did God accidentally ordain too few of lamps? Was it that he really should have said 12, but he made a mistake and said 7? No. I might do that, right? Angie might do that. Andrew might do that, make a mistake, too much or too little. But not God. He does everything perfectly. So, it's the perfect amount of light for in there, just as God ordained. Now, just a little something about this small altar here, the golden altar. Then the priests would come and they would take some coals, some hot coals from off of the big altar outside, the brazen altar where the animal sacrifices are made, take some coals off of there, put them in this little one, and sprinkle some of the special incense that God said just how to make it. And it would go up and be smelled by God. Okay? So here is this room that's holy, and it's made to represent the family, household, loving fellowship that God grants to sinners who don't deserve it. It includes sitting down at the table to eat together. It includes having 7 lamps to see by. And it includes getting to talk with God. You know how a lot of the sweetness of being at home with your own family is that you can sit down at the table and for the most part talk freely, speak freely with one another. Sometimes a little too freely, and your parents have to say one at a time, you know, quit yelling, you know, everybody doesn't need to talk at once. But you get to talk to God, which is what the putting the incense represents, praying to him. So there's this representation. And what we're really after in this study is understanding 7 golden lampstands. Okay? When John is given the vision of the 7 lampstands or candlesticks that are the 7 churches, it comes from back in the tabernacle, in the holy place, the sevenfold candlestick or lampstand called the menorah. 12 over here, a full supply for the whole people of God, a loaf for every tribe. And over here, light. assumed to be just the right amount of light, just the right kind of light. Okay? Now, at this point, would any of you brothers like to put forth anything about your thoughts about the seven at this point? Now, there's more, of course. The Bible says a lot more about this. But at this point, just that much from the Holy of Holies. Do you have any thoughts you'd like to try out, or anything you've learned, or a question you'd like to frame about the seven lamps at this point? Okay, so then I'll just mention or re-mention one thing about this. The 12 cakes or loaves and the seven lamps, they're in the same place, they're ordained by the same God, they are part of the same symbolism, so that whatever 12 is symbolizing at the table, which is something like sufficient bread for every member of the household, there is the symbolism in the sevenfold candlestick has got to be something similar. Now, it can be a different aspect of it. It can be, different, not that was the right way to say it. It can be some different aspect of it, but it's got to be something closely related to the symbolism in the 12 cakes or loaves of bread. Okay, now I'm still looking with you for why seven? Seven candlesticks. Clearly, it's seven in Revelation because it's seven in Exodus. It's seven in the vision because it was seven in the tabernacle. But why was it seven in the tabernacle? Why wasn't it 12 or 3 or 40 or 10 or whatever? Okay? Well, Genesis. Okay? Genesis chapter 5. We've looked so many times at the creation week. Isn't it funny? We run back to the creation stories, true histories, true historical stories over and over again. 6 days of creating and one day of rest means that the creation was all completed in 7 days. So that seven is laid down at the very beginning. Seven. How much of the world was created in that first 7 day cycle? All of it, right? How much of the entire creation? All of it, right? And was it halfway done, then a break on the seventh day, and then create the rest the next week? No, it was all completed. It's all completed. Now the Father keeps working. He's making new babies and new rabbits and, makes new clouds form. There's all kinds of work that the Creator is still doing. But the actual creation finished that first time. Finished in 6 days, but then with the seventh day in which He rested, and then He makes a seven-day week in which He has created the entire creation. Okay? He's created the entire creation. Okay, so Genesis 5, 31. Genesis 5 is that wonderful genealogy, you know, where God says, I created Adam, and then he had a son, and then he had a son, and then he had a son, and he gives everybody's age down to the year, down to single-digit year. Meaning this is not just a myth or not just a story or fairy tale. This is actual, carefully recorded history. And everybody's living to 900 and something, right? Who lived the longest? Methuselah. 969 years. If I recall correctly, Adam, it was 950. Everybody's living to 900 and something, or almost 900. But then Genesis 5, 31. Look at this. And all the days of Lamech were 777 years. He lived to 777. Everybody else is living to 900 something or 800 something, but him, 777. And then the flood. Then Noah and the flood. Lamech was Noah's father. So 777, then the flood. Now, I don't claim to understand anything about that. I went reading and everything I could think of to read, and I didn't find anybody's explanation of Lamech 777. I am sure if I had headed for Google, I'm sure I could have got every crazy person with every harebrained theory about that. And maybe somebody would have told me the truth, but I don't know how I could have sorted through 8 million hits on the internet. I was just looking in the old books I usually look in. Does any of you brothers know anything about Lamech being 777 years old when he died? You ever learn anything about that, or does that, is it obvious to you what that would be about? Me either. But it was so clearly a matter of seven that I thought I would have us come by here. You can at least pick that up and put it in your basket, even if you don't know how to understand it, okay? So keep that handy in case it does you any good at any point. Genesis chapter 7. God commanded Noah. You know, the standard thing that we learn all the time is God told Noah to take how many of each animal into the ark? Two, right. But that was most animals. There was a few animals that the number wasn't two. Genesis chapter 7. And the Lord said unto Noah, come thou and all thy house into the ark. For thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation. Of every clean beast thou shalt take to thee by sevens. Sevens, the male and his female. And of beasts that are not clean, by two, the male and his female. Of fowls also of the air, by sevens, the male and the female. To keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth. Okay, two of the unclean animals, seven of the clean animals, including the clean birds. Okay, later in the law, we learn what the clean animals are, and they are the sheep, goats, cattle, deer, those animals that chew the cud and split the hoof, that have a two-part split hoof and that chew the cud. And there are the clean birds, which are essentially basically the ones that aren't the scavenging birds. And so seven of the clean animals. Now, some people say the seventh one was a single male to be offered as sacrifice, which Noah did when he got off the ark. Some people said it was seven. Some people say it was seven pairs. At any rate, the clean animals, seven. And it says to keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth. The two animals, two of the unclean animals would do that. And then the seven would do that better or more. All the clean animals, seven of each. Okay. Any of you brothers learned anything about that in the past, or does that make anything obvious to you about seven? Now, isn't it true that if it's a matter of these things reproducing, multiplying, isn't it true that the 12 would serve better than seven? If you want to reproduce these once the flood's over, wouldn't 12 of them serve better than 7? Yes. God doing whatever he pleases, couldn't he do just as much with 2 as he could with 7? He could have just said 2 of everything, and then when they got off the ark, he could have more blessed the clean animals where they multiplied faster. He sure could have done this by whatever numbers he wanted, but he ordained 7. That's why it was 7. Wasn't Moses' idea to take 7 cattle, but only 2 elephants. It was God's ordination that it would be 7 cattle and 2 elephants. Okay. So that when they got off the ark, the people would be well provided for. The clean animals, the most useful to man, would reproduce faster. The clean animals, which are the best for food, you could spare one to eat much sooner than the others. Clean animals, which are generally the ones that are going to be domesticated, you're going to have so many more of them, so much sooner. The ones that are going to be suitable for sacrifice, for worship, because ever since Abel, we've been offering animal sacrifices from clean animals. So the ones that are suitable for sacrifice, they're going to have more of and extra of. Anything you brothers would like to observe at that point? Okay. All creation is made in a 7-day period. Lamech lives 777 years, and then there's the flood. God ordained that Noah bring 7 of the clean animals to keep seed alive upon the face of all the earth. You remember from study of the one day in 7, when God announced to Noah he was just about to send the flood, he said he would send it in 7 days. And then he did send it on the 7th day. When the flood was over and Noah was needing some way to know whether it was okay to open the door and go out, he sent out a bird, and then before sending out another, he waited 7 days and waited another 7 days. There's all this 7 going on there. The waiting 7 days seems to be related to the Sabbath day and the 7th day of the week and stuff like that. I don't know how much independent meaning that has regarding 7. All right, Genesis chapter 21. You're kind of building up a body of data here that you can then start to see patterns in. Some of you people have done well in math, and you've been in that kind of math where you're making a graph and you want to see how something is, but if you only have 2 data points, your graph is pretty poor and really can't tell you much. But by the time you can plot 10 points, you have a graph that's starting to maybe tell you something. By the time you got 100 data points, maybe you can really see, and you plot those, maybe you can really see what this thing is. You've got it pretty well graphed now. I'm hoping that something like that is going on here with you and with me, where you're taking in these places where God is talking to you about 7. And this is going to start to, you're going to be able to start to see this graph in your mind when you get enough of these data points in there. Okay, Genesis chapter 21. You know, Abraham has become very rich. God has greatly blessed him. He's practically like a small country, or he's practically like a small town himself. You know, his household is hundreds of people and thousands of animals. It's like if Abraham were the mayor of Honey Grove, but it was composed entirely of tents and animals, and the entire town of Honey Grove just kind of migrated around the northern part of Texas wherever there was plenty of grass. You know, that's what Abraham was like by this time. He was like his own city or town. And the neighboring kings were eager to be at peace with him because they saw that God was with him. So King Abimelech came and made a treaty or covenant of peace with Abraham. And once they had, then Abraham brought up a problem that there was between them. This is Genesis 21, verse 25. And Abraham reproved Abimelech because of a well of water, which Abimelech's servants had violently taken away. And Abimelech said, I knew not who hath done this thing. Neither did you tell me, neither yet had I heard of it, but today. And Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them both to Abimelech, and both of them made a covenant. And Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, what mean these 7 ewe lambs, which you have set apart by themselves? And he said, for these 7 ewe lambs shalt thou take of my hand, that they may be a witness unto me that I have digged this well. Okay? Abraham and his servants dug a well, which was a big deal. It was a lot of work. It's very important that they found a good spot where they could dig a good well. This well was for their absolute survival. They themselves and their animals cannot survive without the water from this well. But then somebody else's servants came and by force took control of it. So now it's being rightfully restored to him. And as a sign of it, or a seal of it, or a witness to it, he sets apart 7 lambs and gives them to this foreign king who receives them. And that's the sign or seal that this well is indeed Abraham's well. He is going to provide water for his household and all his flocks by means of this 7 lamb gift. 7. Now, you know, it seems like 6 would have been okay. Not sure why 8 wouldn't have been a little better. But he knew, blessed by God, he knew what to do. 7 lambs. Now you can file that away and keep building on that. Anything you brothers would like to observe at this point with what we've taken in so far about these 7s? Okay. Genesis chapter 29. Abraham had a son by promise, whose name was, everybody? Isaac. Isaac had 2 sons, the older son named Esau, the younger son named Jacob, and his mother made trouble for him, and he was sent back to his relatives. And when he arrived, he spotted a second or third cousin of his, a beautiful young woman named Rachel, yes. And he had not brought anything with him, just his staff. He had no money, no sign of the wealth that belonged to his family back home. So he couldn't, you know, he couldn't hand over all the, you know, the gold nose ring and all the stuff that Abraham's servant had brought to these people when he was getting a wife for Isaac. The man is the same man, you know. It's Laban, who was the brother in the case of Rebekah. Now he's the father in the case of Rachel. And this time it's not 10 camels in caravans bringing lots of gold presents and stuff. This time it's just a relative who walks up with nothing. And so how's he going to get a wife? He can't turn over the gold presents and carry her away on a camel. How's he going to get a wife? Genesis 29:20. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. Okay, so you don't have money. What do you have to do? Work, right? And so he worked. And he worked 7 years. And he proposed it. Verse 18, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. He proposed he would serve 7 years to get Rachel for his wife. Okay, he didn't say I'm going to serve 6 years or 8 years or 12 or 10 or 3. He said I'm going to serve 7, and Laban accepted that. Lots of 7s in the history of Jacob. You might enjoy reading it sometime. I sure enjoyed reading it. Genesis 31. You know, that man Laban was quite a trickster. He was always manipulating Jacob. Jacob deserved it, by the way. He had done that to his father and his brother. Now he's getting it done to him by his uncle and father-in-law. And he deserved every bit of it. And in the process, God helped him to learn not to live that way. Eventually, Jacob knew he needed to get away from Laban or he would forever be subject to his tricks. And so he left. Genesis 31:22. His father-in-law Laban chased after him when he left. Genesis 31:22. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled, and he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey, and they overtook him in Mount Gilead. Laban pursued him. It took him 7 days. Now, you all heard what Andrew's saying. He's saying seven, as we're seeing it here in these several places in the Old Testament, seems to have something to do with complete or finished or done. I think I heard you say each of those words. And then that would mean something about the seven lampstands being the seven churches. That it's the complete. What were you saying about that? About it, the completeness or doneness or finishedness about and what it says in Revelation?
Like the complete set or something like that.
Now, what do you think about that, Brother Thad? What do you think about that, Brother Alex? Was that thought already forming in your mind, or when Andrew said it, did it start to sound right to you? Or when Andrew said it, does that seem to sound wrong or fishy to you?
Uh-huh. Of the numbers 7 and 10.
Uh-huh.
More 7 being the number of God, not, we talked about the number of man being 6.
Mm-hmm.
More than being one short of 7.
Mm-hmm.
Being God. So, in a sense, as in, God is complete.
So let me take what you just said and try this out. What God does, he does completely. He finishes. He does something to perfection. And so if it's God's doing, it's going to be right. It's going to be complete, going to be perfect. If it's man's doing, it very well may not be, and it's going to end up being 6. If it's by God's ordination, it's going to be 7. And then it's going to be perfect or complete or done. Something like that? Alex, what did you think when you heard Andrew say complete or finished or done? Or what were you thinking before that? Or what do you think of what Mr. Weems said?
I think that you could infer from that the churches aren't, they didn't make themselves. They didn't get made by men. Because then there would be 6 of them, or you know, there wouldn't be 7 of them.
If it were a thing that God was looking on as just of men, it wouldn't be 7 churches, it would be 6. If maybe Moses had just dreamed up the tabernacle himself, then the description of it wouldn't be as having a sevenfold lampstand. It would have been some other number. But being God's, being of God, it's 7. The week that God made is a 7-day week. In the French Revolution, they can try to make a 10-day week if they want to, but nobody will go for it. Everybody knows it needs to be a 7-day week. Something along those lines? What are you thinking?
The other thing that was occurring to me is when earlier when you were talking about how long you've lived for 777 years, and then the flood came. The other thing like that that's mentioned and it's mentioned in Revelation is the number of the man at 666,
right.
Quite famously, and it's kind
right.
of an interesting thing because it's kind of.
Lamech lived to 777. In Revelation, the number of man, you know, calculated, it's 666.
And then the judgment day. Yeah, the judgment day is something like that.
Okay. So, I'm so thankful that you know, brothers, you know, said what you said, because that's what I had always heard before, that seven was something like God completing something, or it's of God, and it's complete and it's finished, or it's perfect, or something like that. But I realized I didn't really know that from the scriptures. I knew that from reading commentaries and stuff, which is not bad. But so I went and looked these things up and found them. And I was telling you earlier, I started to love hearing this and seeing this, and that, you know, the seven of everything, not of everything, lots of things are not seven, but the several of these several things. Seven of these several things, you know, I realize it is. It is the completeness when God is doing it, or it's for the whole world, or it's for the whole thing. It's for the entire something. The seven lambs, they're going to get water for the entire household and flock. You know, the seven day week is going to be for the creation of the whole world. So then I'm not going to, I don't think I'm going to labor through all the rest of these, but just let me ask you a couple of things. Okay. For how many years did Joseph store up food? And then, whom did he feed with what he had stored up for 7 years? 12 brothers. And all of Egypt. And that whole part of the world. How much grain did he store up in those 7 years? We don't know. And he didn't know, right? Because he had to stop counting because it was so much. The idea that it was an infinite supply. Joseph, a type of Christ. Christ provides by seven for what is needed for all of Israel, as a matter of fact, for all of the world. Jacob bowed down to Esau seven times, and then Esau accepted him. Joseph and his brothers mourned for their father Jacob 7 days. God made the waters of Egypt to be blood for 7 days. The people of Israel ate unleavened bread for 7 days. Now, all of that went before. Yes, Brother Thad, go ahead. Yes. Naaman the leper was told to go bathe in the Jordan River. How many times? 7 times. And he did. And he was not cleansed from his leprosy on the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth time, but on the seventh time completely. Till his skin was like baby's skin. Yeah. Now, the reason I hadn't gotten that yet was that I was doing this up until the tabernacle thing with the sevenfold candlestick. What did they already know? What had God already revealed to his people? What sevens would be already in their mind from the old history and the old stories that had been handed down when they were told make this sevenfold menorah? And then going on, there's lots and lots of seven. In the ceremonial law, seven happens countless times. The conquest of Jericho, how many times did they go around that? On what day did they go around lots of times? The seventh day. How many times did they go around? 7 times, and there were seven priests blowing seven trumpets. How many sons were considered the perfect number of sons? So near the end of the book of Ruth. So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And the women said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life, a nourisher of thine old age, for thy daughter-in-law, whose name was Ruth, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons. Ruth was so good of a daughter-in-law, she was better than the perfect number of sons, which apparently would be seven.
Well, it seems kind of like a similar deal where it's like, you know, better than you than a whole bunch of sons or something like that.
That's right.
Rather than the actual literal number.
Right. Seven, just to represent a lot. The essentially the perfect plentitude of it. First Samuel, this is Hannah praising God when she has had her child Samuel. So that the barren hath borne seven. God has so blessed that the woman who previously couldn't has now had seven children. You know, the ideal or perfect number. Job. There were born unto him seven sons. Okay, so these places in the Bible, the ideal number of sons is seven. The perfect or complete. When God has given you, isn't this kind of what you were saying? When God has given you, then you have seven sons.
I think it's interesting to notice in 1 Samuel, when Elkanah is talking to Hannah and asking her why she's sad, he doesn't say, you know, aren't I better to you than seven sons?
What does he say?
Aren't I
better to you?
Am I not more to you than 10 sons?
Than 10 sons. Elkanah, forever known as Mr. Sensitive, right? And then I have down, you know, naming the leper like Brother Thad mentioned. Here's something from Psalm 12. The words of the Lord are pure words, like silver tried in a furnace, purified seven times. Okay? This seven is something about finished, complete, done, perfect, because it is the work of God or by the command or ordinance of God. So we're seeing seven churches, where of course there are many more than seven churches by that time, and of course there's a million more than that now. But we have a vision of, we have letters to seven churches, and the seven churches are represented in a vision of seven candlesticks, which goes back to the sevenfold menorah back in the tabernacle. Why seven? Why not 12? Why not 10? Why not 3? Why not 40? Why not 144? Seven, because it's a symbol that this is complete, perfect, done, finished, sufficient, enough, just right, ideal, because it is what God has ordained and done. Okay, let's have that be all for tonight. Let's pray over it.